Delighted to be introduced at the Adelaide Press Club, where they don't only introduce the guest speaker, they also introduce the wines. That's as it should be here. And looking forward to getting back to Melbourne eventually tomorrow night to see that clash between the Crows and the Kangaroos. There's some difficulty about people seeing it telecast live, but as Trevor Marmalade remarked at a recent lunch that I was at, that it was pleasing that Nick Martin had gone to Carlton and Byron Pickett had gone to Port Adelaide, because now there were six games in the year where someone wanted to thump Carey. We'll wait and see in terms of the game tomorrow night. But to more serious matters, I've had the pleasure this morning to be down at the opening of the mouth of the Murray, or indeed the closing of it, but I'll come to talk about that later. But just to put some context to those remarks, over the last 20 years, Australians have made enormous sacrifices to modernise our economy. They were prepared to make those sacrifices to make this country a better place for themselves and for future generations. They, of course, expected something in return for that. That was the contract. Labor honoured that contract. We not only delivered tax cuts, we gave the Australian people something in return for the taxes that were collected. Things like saving the Franklin River, superannuation, affordable education, childcare, and of course Medicare. It was a contract between the government and the people, a contract that the Howard government has ripped up and thrown away. It's a government, of course, still demanding the sacrifice, because it's a government that's the highest taxing government now in Australia's history. But in return, they've given nothing back. Only cuts. Cuts to childcare, cuts to universities, and cuts to Medicare. And they've done nothing to save our environment from destruction. A government led by me will renew the contract with the Australian people. We will give back the things that all Australians have worked hard to create. Today I want to concentrate on the need to save two of our greatest icons, Medicare, which will be killed off by the changes that John Howard announced on Monday, and the Murray River, which is slowly dying as a result of decades of government inaction. If they are to be saved, we must act now. Now, I said before that this was the highest taxing government in our history, and to just underscore that point, every one of Peter Costello's seven budgets has taken more in tax out of the Australian government, out of the Australian economy, than any previous government. And there you can see the graph. This month's budget will be no different. Only once in the 7 years that they've been in office has John Howard given Australian families and workers a tax cut. And that came at the time the GST was introduced. Even when the GST tax cuts occurred, they were eaten up within 1 year of operation. Today, an Australian household pays almost $5,000 more in income tax than when this government came to power. Labor, by contrast, delivered seven tax cuts in its 13 years, and in that time it returned more than bracket creep to Australian income earners. We were the party of tax reform. But the reason I make this point at the outset is that Australians are working harder than ever before, yet they're being slugged with record taxes, higher tax rates through bracket creep, high family tax debts, the GST, and more hidden taxes, the taxes that were supposed to be eradicated once the GST came in. And of course, for all of the rest of it, they got a GST as well. The point of this, how is it that if we're being taxed so much, we're getting back so little in return? We're certainly not getting a better health system. Over the last three decades, Labor governments have built universal access to quality health care. Medicare was part of that contract that I mentioned earlier, a contract between the people and their government. It ensures the health of all Australians on the basis of medical need, not on income. I believe that all Australians should have the right to visit a doctor or attend a well-funded public hospital without charge. I won't say for free, because it's not for free. Australians have already paid for this right through their Medicare levy and their taxes. They've earned it. But the simple truth is that John Howard has never believed in Medicare. The facts on this also speak for themselves. While rates of bulk billing increased in every year under Labor governments after we introduced it, and remember we were starting from nothing, it has been in decline ever since the government was elected in 1996. There you see the comparison of our last 7 years of office and their last 7 years of office. There you see the steady climb in terms of bulk billing to over 80% in our community. And in the last 7 years, because the government hasn't been serious about supporting the Medicare system and doing what's necessary to give incentive to bulk bill, you've seen this dramatic decline. Bulk billing by GPs has fallen a total of 11% since the Howard government came to office. It's higher here in South Australia. It's in fact 14%. Since 2001, the downward trend has become more dramatic, and you can see that in the graph itself. And it's fallen below 70% as a nation for the first time since 1989. The purpose of this graph is to show the difference between a government that is committed to Medicare and a government that doesn't believe in it. A government that wants families to pay more and more for their health and get less and less back. You pay the Medicare levy, you pay private health insurance, and now you're going to have to pay to go to the doctor. So under John Howard, you have to pay three times to get the same service. Where is Alan Fells when you need him? With the latest package that the government's announced for families, the truth is that for families with two children that earn over the cut-off point for a health care card a mere $32,300, they will pay even more to visit a doctor. Why? Because there's no incentive in the package for doctors to bulk bill those patients. No incentive at all. This is a government that's recognised it has to increase incentives by lifting the patient rebate for pensioners and concession card holders. If it's the case that to restore bulk billing for them requires an increase in the patient rebate, why not for everyone? And in the case of concession card holders, the fact that only a dollar is being increased in terms of the patient rebate in metropolitan areas will mean even they won't get access truly to bulk billing, because the doctors simply won't follow the incentive. And you've seen many comments in the last 3 days to that effect. But no family that earns $32,300 a year is wealthy. They do struggle to make ends meet. In essence, what John Howard is doing by this package of measures is turning on his own backers. The people that put him in 96, and he said he would do something for all of us, he's now doing for only a few of us. And these are the people in particular that are going to suffer. What it really means is that even in areas in which bulk billing remains high, if you earn more than $32,300 and you've got a couple of kids, there's no incentive to bulk bill. You'll end up with a doctor that seeks a co-payment. Well, families can't afford it. That's the simple truth of it, and that's why I believe that there will be a massive reaction to this package. So what do they do if they can't find a doctor who bulk bills? They either don't go to the doctor, or they turn up to a hospital's casualty department. As a result already of the decline in bulk billing, people are visiting their GPs less than before. Last year, Australians visited their GPs 1.75 million times fewer than in the previous year. That's a dramatic decline. But the public hospitals have seen dramatic rises in the number of patients presenting in their emergency wards who could have been seen by a GP if only they could have one bulk billed or that was an after-hours service. So this latest package by the government will only place more pressure on the public hospital system. Yet, what's the government's response in that? Apart from its health minister boycotting a meeting of state health ministers a couple of months ago to thrash this out, they've now presented the states with a take-it-or-leave-it package with strings attached, and which will mean that the states get less money than they'd previously budgeted for. This is not the way to fix the health crisis in our system. We've got to approach it cooperatively with the states. The Medicare Alliance, which Labor has advocated, the partnership between state and federal governments, not the buck passing, but a genuine partnership. But also we know that if we restore bulk billing in this country, that's going to itself take enormous pressure off the public hospital system. The truth of it is that Australia is being marched directly down the road of the Americanised health system. User pays, two-tiered healthcare, co-payment, and a circumstance in which your credit card is worth more than your Medicare card, in which when you go to a doctor, it's not the Medicare card that's swiped, they ask you for that credit card. That's not a health system this country wants. Why would you destroy the best health system in the world, recognised universally as such? Why would you destroy it and replace it with the American version? But the Prime Minister is determined to reduce Medicare to a second-class safety net just for the elderly and the poor. For everyone else, he sees private health insurance as their safety net. But it's a safety net that's only available to those who can afford it. Prime Minister, out of this package, is unable to guarantee that his proposals will increase rates of bulk billing, nor will he guarantee that doctors won't increase their fees for patients who aren't bulk billed. Well, I'll give the guarantee to stop the bulk billing decline, but I'll go further. I'm committing to restore bulk billing to save Medicare. A government committed to Medicare can and will do it, and I'll be indicating the details of that in my response to the budget. We do have the world's best health system. Why would we destroy it? Labor built Medicare. Only Labor believes in Medicare. Only Labor will save Medicare. This is not just a fight between me and John Howard. This is a fight for what the Australian people want. It's theirs. It's their system. They've paid for it. They have overwhelming confidence in it. Let's ensure that they keep it. By working together, it's a fight that we can win. The choice is simple. John Howard and the Liberals will destroy Medicare. Simon Crean and Labor will save Medicare. If you want to save Medicare, vote Labor. Now, I've talked today about the health of Australians. I want to now talk about the health of Australia. We must build a sustainable future, and that includes a sustainable environment. In the early 1990s, as Primary Industries Minister in the Hawke government, I learned firsthand the beauty and fragility of our environment and the importance of building a sustainable future for our industries. As Shadow Treasurer, I changed the Labor Party's economic policy, its platform, away from one that just referred to economic growth to one focused on sustainable growth. Sustainability is a starting point. It's not a trade-off. I view the environment as critical to our future, an opportunity, not an obstacle. We can repair our environment and create more jobs and opportunities for more Australians, and in doing it, it's the ultimate win-win outcome. This morning, as I indicated earlier, I visited the mouth of the Murray. What I saw saddened me. It saddens all Australians who see it. Its mouth is all but closed. Barely a trickle is flowing to the sea. In some places, it's a river that's now flowing backwards. Native fish are dying. The Murray is becoming choked with exotic species and algal blooms. The magnificent River Red Gums and our floodplains are dying of thirst because no floodwaters nourish them. Dryland salinity now threatens to affect around 6 million hectares of the Murray-Darling Basin by 2050. And undrinkable water? It's a vision that we have of underdeveloped countries, not of Australia. Yet within 20 years, if we don't address this problem now, Adelaide's drinking water will be undrinkable 2 days out of five. That's hardly a vision splendid for this nation or for this state. In short, what we're talking about is the Murray dying. But what saddens me most is that we've watched this disaster unfold, knowing fully both the problem and the solution. We're simply taking too much water out of this great river. And if you want evidence, if you want evidence that engineering solutions ultimately can't beat nature, then all you have to do is to look at the pathetic image that we saw this morning. The Murray River reduced to a trickle. The mouth of the Murray is now barely the length of a cricket pitch, and the water is only knee-deep. As soon as the dredgers take the silt and sand out, nature washes it all back again. We have to work with nature, not against it. And that means increasing the river flow, letting nature wash the river, wash through it, to cleanse it and to bring it back to life. The mighty Murray is one of the great river systems of the world. It's the Australian Amazon. It's like the Nile, our Nile. But try to imagine for a moment the Amazon not flowing, or the Nile not flowing. It wouldn't be just those rivers stopping. Their nations would be stopping as well. The Murray River is just as critical to our future. If we don't change what we're doing here and now, things will get worse. My commitment today is also to save the Murray, and it can be done. We must open the river mouth and get it flowing to the sea again. The Wentworth Group has identified that a minimum additional 450 gigalitres of environmental flows is needed each year to keep the mouth of the Murray River open. This must be delivered as a priority. In the longer term, scientists tell us that the rivers of the Murray-Darling Basin will have a moderate chance of survival if we deliver an additional 1,500 gigalitres of water, and even less chance if we don't. Now, these enormous amounts of water are difficult to visualise, but think of it this way. 1,500 gigalitres represents three times the amount of water in Sydney Harbour. So increasing the flow by that amount means taking out about 20% less water than we take now. The CSIRO predicts that greenhouse gas-induced climate change will cause more frequent and more severe droughts in Australia in the years ahead. that means even less water available in our rivers. It's time for action, not for passing the buck. I want to announce here today three pledges that will help save the Murray from a slow death. First, a commitment to restore 450 gigalitres of environmental flows within the first term of a Green Labor government, enough to keep open the Murray's mouth. Second, to deliver 1,500 gigalitres in environmental flows within 10 years, the minimum required to restore the health of the river. And third, the immediate ratification of the Kyoto Protocol as the first step to an effective global response to climate change. But repair of our environment can't end with just the Murray. There's more that we must do. Land clearing has serious implications for water quality by increasing rates of salinity and land degradation. Past land clearing practice is a major cause of current salinity problems. Unless we control clearing now, we'll face even greater devastation and loss of productive land in the future. In consultation with the states, I'll establish a target to reverse the current decline in the quality and extent of native vegetation across Australia. Again, under my leadership, we will halt land clearing in this country. Saving the Murray and restoring our land is a great national challenge. It's not a simple task. It will require significant long-term investment. But when Australians are determined, we are unstoppable. We built this nation under harsh conditions. We can surely repair it with the same determination. And all Australians need to get involved. My government will work cooperatively with regional communities, state and local governments, farmers and environmentalists, to achieve water efficiency savings, improve infrastructure, and move towards more sustainable land and water use. Another Labor leader, Bob Hawke, saved the Franklin River. I'm committed to saving the Murray River. And it was with great pleasure that I was down there today with my environment spokesman, Kelvin Thompson, who's here with us today, and of course, David Cox, who's also in my shadow ministry. In coming weeks, I'll provide further detail as to how my government will contribute to these important goals, a way to enable all Australians to invest in saving our rivers while creating environmentally sustainable economic growth and jobs. So, the health of Australia's land and rivers and the health of Australians themselves are two issues that I care deeply about. Both are vital to sustain our nation and its lifeblood, our rivers and our families. Australian families have worked hard. They pay more than their fair share of tax. They've kept their part of the contract between the government and the people. Now it's time for the government to do likewise. Medicare and the Murray are dying. We must act now to defend these important national icons. With the highest taxing government in our nation's history, there's simply no excuse for not doing so. But the simple truth is, only Labor will save Medicare, only Labor will save the Murray River. Thank you.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, if we could invite questions, first of all, from any members of the working media who are here at the moment. I think we have our first question ready to go. So,
thank you very much. Yes, and on another issue, Mr. Crean, Peter Seller from Channel 10, in light of the Anglican Church report tabled today, do you regard Peter Hollingworth worthy of remaining Governor General?
I've had the opportunity to get reports of the Anglican Church's report, and it is a very concerning report in relation to one particular example. I think it was example 5 that, or case 5 that they referred to. The conclusion of that report was that that Dr. Hollingworth's decision, whilst made in good faith, was untenable. Thus, the board finds that this complaint was not handled fairly, reasonably, and appropriately. The board also found, in relation to that complaint, and I quote again, "No bishop acting reasonably could have reached the decision to continue a known paedophile in the ministry. There was no extenuating circumstances, nor can the board imagine that any could have justified his continuance." Now, this is a report that it disturbs me, it saddens me, because this issue of child sex abuse is a huge problem for us as a community. It's one that we do have to tackle, and we have to tackle head on because it's been pushed away, it's been hidden for too long. And the circumstances of hiding it have been on graphic display over recent months, and this report highlights one of those examples. Child sexual abuse is a blight on our community. And it was a circumstance in which the Anglican Church was urged by the Prime Minister to investigate the allegations and to report. I met with the families of the victims in Brisbane. I've met with families of victims in many parts of this country, and it's the reason why on other occasions I've announced a policy response to try and address this issue. I'm happy to go to those details, but this is a more immediate point. My judgment back in February was that the controversy and the lack of action by the Governor-General was such that it was diminishing the office of the Governor-General, and that he should resign, and if not, the Prime Minister should seek the termination of his appointment. That's the view that I still hold, and I'm confirmed in it by this report today. I also note that the Anglican Church has asked that in the public interest this report be tabled in both the Queensland and the National Parliament. Premier Peter Beattie has today tabled that report, and I congratulate him for doing it. What staggers me is that our Prime Minister has so far refused to table the report in our Parliament. Now, this is something that the Prime Minister might like to hide from, but it's what Australia has hidden from too long. And we've got to be open, we've got to confront it, and we've got to put families at ease for the future. And that means that we should be prepared to do all in our power to ensure that we learn from this and that it doesn't happen again. And that's why tabling of the report is going to be an important part of that healing and that direction process. And the report should be tabled in the National Parliament.
Mr. Crean, just one other question on another issue. How should the PM respond to pressure from the United States to commit peacekeeping troops in Iraq?
Well, the Prime Minister should respond by insisting when he meets with George Bush on the weekend that the UN be brought in to oversee the reconstruction of Iraq. Because it's the UN that has the expertise as peacekeepers. We know that because we've participated ourselves in East Timor. I think that the events a couple of weeks ago when US soldiers shot and killed civilians thinking that they were being attacked demonstrates the fundamental difference between an army and a police-keeping role. And if the war is now over, and as I understand it, President Bush was to declare that, if not today, very soon, then the task of peacekeeping should be handed immediately over to the UN. Australia's response in those circumstances should have regard to what the UN seeks by way of assistance, but I would have thought that Australia has already made a significant commitment and that we have more pressing issues to deal with on our doorstep and that the burden of peacekeeping should be shared more broadly through the UN process. If, of course, the UN is not brought in, the simple fact remains that we, as one of the three occupying forces, have an obligation in terms of international conventions to maintain the peace. The quickest way to get our troops home is to get the United Nations in. If the United Nations is in overseeing the operation, we will see our troops home as quickly as possible, and that's what I fervently hope for.
Mr. Crean, Robert Main is my name. Have you had that phone call from Kim Beazley yet? And if not, what do you want to say to him? Please elaborate.
Well, I've already said what I want to say to him. I don't believe in pulling punches. I tell people directly what I think, and I think that's always a good philosophy. No, I haven't had the phone call, but I think it's beyond that point at this stage. I'm still happy to talk with Kim at any time. I think he has made a great contribution to this movement, but I think it's best settled in circumstances in which he declares his full support for me, which he has done, but rules out challenge. I think that's in everyone's interest, and we can get on with the task of attacking the government, not dealing with the tax on ourselves.
Mr. Crean, Graham Badger from the ABC. The front page report in The Australian this morning that reported that the Deputy Prime Minister, John Anderson, would personally intervene to win regulatory approval for the $500 million Trans-Tasman Alliance between Qantas and Air New Zealand, a move that had been described as highly anti-competitive by the competition watchdog, Alan Fell. I was just wondering what your reaction to that is, and also his attempt to overturn its rejection of the proposed alliance.
Well, the government's got the right to make that approach, but they have to have a pretty good case. What the Competition and Consumer Commission has said is that such a merger would be not in consumers' best interests. So the government needs to demonstrate a pretty compelling case to counter that point. But look, if the government really is concerned about the state of our domestic airlines and the need for them to, in the light of the SARS virus and all these sorts of things, the downturn, there's a simple proposition that they can take, and that's to abolish the ANSET tax. This is a tax that's unnecessary now, because what it was imposed for, the money has all been collected. There is no justification for this tax continuing, and whilst that tax continues, it is another disincentive to the Australian public flying. If the government's concerned about getting passengers in the sky and tourism going again, abolish the ANSET tax. That's a pretty simple proposition. And if they want to go back to the ACCC, let them, but they'll have to make a pretty strong case.
Do you oppose that alliance going through?
Well, I think that in all of these things, what you've got to do is to say what is in the interests of the consumer. And the ACCC has said that the alliance, as the structure, the proposal as it currently stands, is not in the interests of the consumer. I'm for the consumer. And I think that when we've got an independent body that considers the facts and comes down with those conclusions, you've got to have a pretty strong reason to, or you've got to make a pretty strong case to counter that.
Mr. Crean, Chris Warren from Seven News. You said Labor's committed to restoring bulk billing to save Medicare. Does that mean increasing the Medicare levy, and if so, by how much?
No, I've said that it doesn't mean increasing the Medicare levy. I know that John Howard is trying to run around saying that it must mean that. I think we've really struck home with John Howard. He launched this package on Monday and then went out and talked about it on Tuesday. Since then, he's been issuing press releases trying to counter the allegations that I've been making. But those allegations hit home. What he's doing is ensuring that people over $32,300 in the future will have to make a co-payment. This is a government that spends $30 billion annually in health. The federal government spends over $30 billion in health, and this package, which has been announced, it's $900 million over 4 years, so something approaching $200 million per year. I just would have thought that with that sort of money, if you put your mind to it, you must be able to restore bulk billing. I know you can. The question about the detail will have to await until after Tuesday night when I know what is in the budget. But I know that there is a decent down payment there on which to build. And I'll be doing those calculations in the light of what comes through on Tuesday week.
Mr. Green, Andrew McGarry from the Australian newspaper. You've said that you want to move on from the issues raised by Mr. Beazley over the last week or so. However, we have in our paper this morning some comments made this week by one of your front benchers, basically making some criticism of the approach of the party and saying to succeed we must cast aside the conservatism and caution of recent years, aim high, think big and attack with all the energy we can muster. Isn't that a fairly unveiled criticism of both yourself and Mr. Beazley, given that you have led the party in those recent years of conservatism?
Well, I know that the Australian newspaper has come to that conclusion, and I know its obsession with this issue of the leadership. But quite frankly, what Lindsay was saying in terms of having to be bold, I agree with. And it's why I have been prepared to take bold decisions internally for the party and now in terms of policy solutions that affect Australian families. I've made a huge commitment here today, and that is to restore bulk billing, to save Medicare. This is going to be a fundamental issue in the lead up to the next election, but it's a campaign that we must enjoin now. The government has to get legislation through the parliament to introduce these measures. Labor is going to oppose those measures that destroy Medicare, and I call on the minor parties to join us in opposing those measures. If the government wants to take these to an election, let them be honest about it, because the last election they went to, they said they were going to keep Medicare. These measures don't keep it. And as for the commitment in terms of the environment, I've made a major commitment here today in terms of saving the Murray River system. I believe that's in the interests of us as a nation, not just here in South Australia, but us as a nation. And it's a statement about my leadership, not just addressing issues important to families, but important to us surviving as a nation, sustainably and strongly, understanding our strengths and seeking to build on them, not to destroy them. And they're the issues that I'll concentrate on. They're the issues that I'll be taking proposals to the Australian people about.
Well, Mr. Crean, isn't it the case that if you don't, if images like this that you're raising today, if they don't make an impact with the electorate in the near future, then you may not be taking the party to the next election to see that fight through to the finish?
Look, I know that these issues make impact with the Australian people. I wish that the Australian newspaper would go out and poll people as to whether they believe Medicare should be destroyed or saved. And I think you'd get an overwhelming response to that, my friend. But of course, this is not a poll that you're interested in. This is not a poll that you're interested in. And why don't you go and ask the question, do you think that we should save the Murray River system? I think that you'd get an overwhelming endorsement of that position. You can be preoccupied with the minutiae. I'm going to be preoccupied with the issues that matter to our families and to our nation, and I won't be deterred.
Mr. Crean, Catherine Hockley from the Advertiser. Just on the River Murray issue, you talked before about experts saying that 20% of current diversions will have to be given back to the river.
Yes.
Experts are also saying that any water restored from the river is going to come from irrigation. Will a Labor government be willing to, willing to legislate to further that cap on irrigation that's in place at the moment?
Well, I think we have to be prepared to look at all necessary measures. I'm not too sure that legislation is needed. I think I mentioned when you asked this question earlier out at the mouth of the Murray that when I was Primary Industries Minister, I understood the opportunity that existed through the water programs that were available to actually leverage an outcome whereby we got far more efficient use of water and effective savings of existing waters. I mean, one example was the covering of the channels in the Wimmera. I mean, too much of our water is lost to evaporation. You've also got channels that are not lined, and we lose through seepage enormous amounts of water. So, well, as I understand, up to 90% can be lost in evaporation and seepage. 90% of the water going through those channels. Now, that's just not good enough. And you think in terms of retaining that 90%, and you don't have to start looking at legislated solutions. But I think that where we've got to start, and this is the important point of your question, we've got to understand that the serious problem is the death of the Murray. And unless we start addressing that, we're not going to have anything to be talking about anyway down the track. And it impacts on all of us, not just the irrigators. But I believe that this is an area in which we have to involve ourselves with the state governments. I would give it the top priority in terms of the Council of Australian Governments. You have to get heads of government involved in this solution. Not just environment ministers or agricultural ministers, because they'll always come from different perspectives. We have to find a national solution which is about saving the river system. And we have to be prepared to pool our resources to deal in a clever way with new infrastructure, new mechanisms, new procedures by which we can save the system and improve the flows. I'm convinced it can be done, but it does require governments to make the hard decisions and to actually engage themselves in it and be serious about finding the solution. That I'm prepared to do.
Mr. Crean, Tom Richardson from the Advertiser. Senator George Campbell said on the 5th of June last year that your leadership should be given 12 months before reassessment. How do you reflect on your performance in the intervening 11 months?
Look, I was given... That was the June the 5th quote, and then the timetable was going to move to the end of the year, and then it was wait till the New South Wales election. Look, I'm the leader of the Labor Party, and I'm here today announcing serious policy initiatives. And I would have thought that for the Adelaide Advertiser, what was more important was what was being said by me on May 1, 2003, than anything someone said on June the 5th, 2002.
Ms. Green, it seems to be the consensus that any potential challenge of the opposition would not get a majority as it stands. Would the possibility of even a substantial minority be enough to make your position untenable?
I'm not too sure how long it took you to craft that question, which I noted that you had to read, but I would have thought that what was more important, the people of South Australia, and I say this seriously to you, more important to the people of South Australia is how can they get a doctor that bulk bills, and how is the mouth of the Murray River going to be kept open? They're the two critical issues today that I would have thought deserved unquestioned consideration on your part. What you've got is a political leader prepared to commit to solutions to both of those problems. And in modern day politics, that's what the Australian public wants to know, and that's all they want to know.
Thank you.
Mr. Crean, Nance Haxton from the ABC Radio's PM program. You say that Bob Hawke saved the Franklin. You're committed to saving the Murray. Surely you must admit that saving the Murray is a far more complex proposal involving four states. How do you realistically propose to restore those flows that everyone is agreement in do need to be restored but have failed to practically do so?
Well, by taking the first bold step today, which is committing to the amounts of water that have to be put back in, to also saying that we do acknowledge that this involves four states, not one state, and no one's denying that that makes it more complex, but just because it's more complex doesn't mean you try. This is an issue that we have to address. It's an issue not just for South Australia, it's an issue for all of our all of the states that are served by the Murray-Darling River system. The very fact that we have a Murray-Darling Basin Commission is recognition of the fact that the four states do have to cooperate more effectively. What I'm saying isn't there is the commitment by the Prime Minister of this country to actively engage himself in it. His view of life is to turn up to the COAG meeting and say, our rivers are in crisis and we need to save them, but the states have to bear all the costs. That's no solution at all. No solution at all. And for a Prime Minister that recognises a problem but wants to buck past the solution shows he's not serious about a solution. I recognise there's a problem. I recognise there has to be shared responsibility and I will engage actively in producing that outcome. I was able to achieve it when I was Primary Industries Minister, able to achieve it with many different states, able to do important water preservation works, water saving, water retention, water reticulation, water infrastructure works with many of the states around this country. If there's a will, there's a way, and my commitment is there today.
Would it involve the controversial proposal of buying back water licences, which it is agreed would be horrendously expensive?
Well, if there are legal rights to water, then of course compensation will be involved if that becomes the issue. But what we can't continue to do is to accept that inefficient claims to water themselves create some sort of artificial right. Now, I accept that there are going to be issues with the stakeholders here. It's not just the state governments, it is the stakeholders. But together, I'm convinced that we can address this problem. Most importantly, I know we have to address this problem. It's an imperative, and if we don't do it, we won't have the Murray River. It will die.
Mr. Green, David Eccles, an advertiser. You talk about the cooperation between the states, but in many ways the federal government dictates to the states. Now, in lead up to federation, South Australia tried and failed to have control of the Murray taken away from the colonies of Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria. Not surprisingly, South Australia failed. A century later, they're still in control of the various states, and the Murray is still dying. Now, everyone's talking about the need to rescue the river. Can you commit to that if you were Prime Minister to at last taking control of the Murray away from the various states and actually setting it up federally and basically committing to a Ministry of the Murray? We've had ministries for status of women in South Australia. We've had a Minister for Y2K compliance. Why hasn't there been a Minister for the Murray federally?
Well, what I can commit to is to giving this top priority and finding the solution. Whether the mechanism that you talk about is achieved through the bureaucratic end of it or the ministerial responsibility, I don't know. But what I do know is that the most important environmental issue that we as a nation have to face up to at the moment is our water. And within that, the Murray River system, I think, if we can focus on it as a demonstration of the broader set of issues, but show the determination to solve it, that, I think, is the important step forward. I happen to believe that you don't have to solve these things by necessarily going to new structures. I think that with the proper cooperation and drive and leverage, you can get the outcome that's needed. I think it's far better where you've got overlapping jurisdictions to have people in the loop and committed to the solution so that there's ownership of it. I think that's a far more successful and lasting outcome. And that's what I would try and develop as Prime Minister.
Restriction or reduction in their water use. So doesn't it all just come down to words in the end? Unless you
It comes down to leadership and action. That's what it comes down to. And I'll give the leadership and I'll deliver the action.
Everyone, I think we are getting fairly short on time, so if we could keep our questions reasonably brief, we'll deal with the people who are up there now, but after that I think we'll have to call an end to question time.
Mr. Crean, Lachlan Parker from ABC Radio News. Just a follow-up to your earlier answer in relation to Iraq. Defence Minister Robert Hill has this afternoon announced that 150 Australian troops will remain in Iraq for as long as necessary. Just wanted to see what your response was to that open-ended commitment.
Well, I want to know the circumstances in which they're being kept there. I haven't seen that. It is an open-ended commitment from what you've explained, but the Prime Minister himself indicated we wouldn't be involved in any peacekeeping exercise. We don't have to be involved in a peacekeeping exercise if the UN takes control. I want to see our troops home as quickly as possible now that the war is over. And if the United Nations is to take control of the reconstruction, as our government should be arguing for, then all of our troops can be returned home.
Mr. Crean, John Murch, Radio Adelaide. I'd like to turn your attention to today being May Day, which I actually thought might be the centre of your speech today. Just quickly, can you tell us how young people and even those who are older in higher education, further education, can actually get proactive again and not be so cynical about what seems to be the Labor Party?
Well, I don't find that, quite frankly, in terms of many young people that I talk to. I think that young people are under enormous pressure these days to perform, and young people are encouraged to complete Year 12, and yet in many cases can't find the places to get into a university or to go on to a TAFE course. It's interesting that when I was Education Minister in 1996, if the places that I'd committed to in the forward estimates had been retained by this government, there would have, over the last 7 years, been 120,000 additional university places. That is a huge difference. And we would have done it with a HEC scheme far fairer than anything proposed today or into the future. What worries me is that this government's philosophy in relation to education is the same as it is in relation to health, and that is to shift the onus from public expenditures to private expenditure. We have a perverse circumstances now in relation to the health debate where there is an uncapped commitment to private health insurance, but there's a reducing cap to public health. We've got to reverse that trend. And in the case of education, the solution that the government seems to be headed down the path of is creating more places by allowing universities to offer fee-paying places where the government gets out of having to fund fully funded HECS places. So young people have got a pretty bleak future. So have their families, quite frankly, because I think it impacts not just on young people, but it impacts upon families. Families are increasingly being put under financial pressure to help fund the increased X or funding the university place to ensure that their boy or girl gets a university education. That is not a smart way to run a country. A country that prides itself in its skills, in its educational capacity, and knows that its future relies in continuing to educate not just our young people, but all of our people through a lifelong learning process. We as a nation have got to understand it's in our interest to invest in our education and our health systems, not withdraw from them. And the ideological shift that's happening under this government is one that thinks that they're great economic managers because they run down the public debt, but all they've done is to shift it to private debt. And that's why families are suffering. They're being taxed more, but they're getting less services. That's why they're being squeezed. And that's an issue that cuts across not just young people, but families at large. And I've said today my commitment is to restore the Medicare system, but I also am committed to ensuring that there are additional affordable places for people to go through university and TAFE. It's their entitlement. We can't say to them it's important to secure a Year 12 qualification when we know that there's got to be some reward for them obtaining that. And we know increasingly the reward is attached to further education, whether it be university or through the vocational stream.
Barry Barrett, freelance rural journalist. The problem with the River Murray, of course, is the excessive amount of water being taken out from the top of the river. This is under the control of three Labor governments, and there's no doubt about it that Australia realises that Labor governments that are causing our problems down here. One of the greatest environmental disasters in Australia at the moment is the clearing of country in Queensland, once again under a Labor government. From what you were saying, are you two different parties, or how are you going to overcome these problems?
No, I think that the real problem is that whilst I see the fact that we have Labor governments in every state as an opportunity, not as a threat. John Howard sees them as a threat. The question of land clearing, we went to the last election with a proposal that would have halted land clearing in Queensland. We were, and I've said today in this address that I gave, that too remains my commitment. We do have to halt land clearing, but you've got to get serious about it and not just push all the onus back onto the states. This has to be a shared commitment. So does the Murray River system. So do so many of our environmental issues. And what I'm saying to you is that I have the capacity to work cooperatively with those states, not just because they're the same party, but because we share the same convictions. But you're never going to have those convictions delivered if you've got a government in power at Canberra that seeks to pass the buck rather than draw the cooperation and the shared commitment to solution.
With due respect, I would accept what you say if you had managed to control or persuade the state governments to do what you say is your policy. Thank you.
And one last question. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Simon, Ralph Clark from the Bullamacanca News, a newspaper of similar stature to the Adelaide Advertiser. Simon, my question is a follow-up to actually the last question you just had. Will a federal Labor government seek to have the New South Wales, Queensland, Victorian and South Australian parliaments hand over their constitutional riparian rights over the Murray-Darling Basin to a federal government and thus allow a national government to deal with a national crisis? You may recall at the 2000 National Conference of the Labor Party, former Senator Chris Schott from South Australia and myself actually moved a motion along those lines to in fact give a federal Labor government the constitutional powers to deal effectively with our River Murray crisis at the expense of the state's rights madness of Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria in particular, which was spectacularly and resoundingly defeated. I think there were about 2 votes for it out of 200.
So, well, I hope there are at least 2.
Including your own, I gather.
I hope there are at least 2
in your
2 movement.
So I'm really after. Nice to say it. And I appreciated very much what you did say today. and you've shown a lot of guts and fortitude over the last several weeks, which I don't think you've been given credit for enough within the Labor movement. This will be a great test for a great national Labor government, and I sincerely hope that we can override that state pettiness.
Yeah, well, we've got to override the sectional interest and develop a solution in the national interest. But I just make the point off that I made before, that I start these approaches, these issues, by identifying the problem and seeking to get the cooperation needed to solve it. I'm convinced that we can get that cooperation. And I think that to go threatening before... Well, to go threatening in advance that what you're going to do is to take powers away, the question of power becomes the issue, not the solution. I'm interested in the solution. We know what the problem is. We know there's a crisis. We know we have to work together. What I want to lead is the capacity to get the solution that delivers the sensible outcome. I'm convinced it can do it.
I'm a believer in Teddy Roosevelt's old statement, speak softly and carry a big stick.
Everyone, if you could thank Simon Crean very much for his time this afternoon. Well, Judith will be back up on stage shortly to take us through the other important parts of the afternoon, which include the raffle draw. I could just remind you that coming up next week, we have another luncheon. Professor Paul Dibb will be speaking, and we have all the details at the front desk. Hopefully you'll all turn up for that one as well. On the 5th of June, Herbert Girardet will be speaking to the Press Club. The 2nd of July, we've got Robert Champion de Crepigny. And at a date yet to be fixed, Andrew Dimitriou, currently the operations manager of the AFL. We'll wait and see precisely which position he has, but he will be along with us for a football lunch. Judith.
Thank you, Alan. He can now relax and have his dessert. Ladies and gentlemen, we still have to draw the raffle, and there are wonderful prizes. I know a couple of you have had to escape because we're slightly behind schedule. Could I ask the fabulous Sue Lamshed from Chelsea to come up and give me a hand? I was hoping that we might get one of the journalists, but they've all gone back to work. They're hard working. Sue, can I ask you to draw, first of all, for a Telstra cordless telephone? S. Gawler. It's an orange ticket, C12. It looks like S. Gawler. Is it? Thanks, Sue. And... The next one is from the Sunday Mail. Thanks very much to the lovely Mike Pilkington who rescued us. St. Hallett, 1998, Blackwell, Barossa, Shiraz. Awfully nice. We have a purple ticket to D74. Purple, my favourite colour. Come on, who's got purple D74? Redraw. No, not my... Oh, no, is that ever fabulous? We did say he was a winner. I think that should at least make the Bill King column. The next one is a selection of wines courtesy of our wonderful Robert Main. And, well, I hope it's not the same person, purple D67. Right. Okay, and then we have, we'll draw two more, Sue. Yeah. We have two cartons of special beer from South Australian Brewing. Oh, well, I know who this one is. There's only one, Samala, but she has gone back to work, so the guys in the ties will have to take this back to Sarah Harris. One more. I think that means a party in the advertiser. And the last one is red C13, Margaret Patkin. Thank you very much, Sue. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We hope we'll see you here again, not here again, but at the lunch next week. And as Alan said, don't forget to pick up your forms on the way out for those. We ask you to book as quickly as possible because, as you can see, things sell out really quickly and we need to know the numbers for next week. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen.